Welcome to the Community Oncology Journal podcast for November 2012. I'm Dr. David Henry. This month, we bring you a review of pazopanib to treat advanced soft tissue sarcoma, dasatinib in the first-line treatment of chronic myeloid leukemia, CML, why do cancer patients smoke and what can we do about it, what is the story with the registration of clinical trials before they can be performed, and then finally, how to integrate clinical trials into your practice. So let's begin. Pazopanib for non-adipocytic, non-GIST, soft tissue sarcomas by Dr. Hendafar and Chawla from the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, California. The five-year survival of osteosarcoma has improved from less than 15% to more than 50%. However, the 10-year survival for advanced soft tissue sarcoma is less than 10%. Doxorubicin and ifosfamide have been the standard first-line chemotherapy with response rates of about 10 to 25%. Soft tissue sarcomas are vascular and often have elevated levels of vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF. The small molecule pazopanib is a multi-targeted tyrosine kinase inhibitor with activity against VEGFs 1, 2, and 3 and platelet-derived growth factor receptor. A phase 2 trial in soft tissue sarcoma was encouraging with pazopanib 800 mg daily versus placebo in advanced soft tissue sarcoma. While the response rates were very low, there was a significant difference in progression-free survival of 4.6 months in the pazopanib arm versus 1.6 months in the placebo arm, or a difference of 3 months, in the so-called Palette trial. Typical adverse effects of the TKIs included skin hyperpigmentation, nausea, fatigue, diarrhea, and hypertension. Factors associated with reduced risk of progression in pazopanib-treated patients were better ECOG performance score and lower to intermediate grade tumors. In April 2012, the FDA approved pazopanib for after first-line treatment in soft tissue sarcoma patients who have failed prior chemotherapy. This gives our patients who have received doxorubicin, ifosfamide, gemcitabine, and docetaxel another option in the second or third line setting, especially attractive since this is only a pill. Dasatinib in the first line treatment of chronic myeloid leukemia by Patricia Ault, RN, from the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. CML was responsible for 11.3% of new leukemias in 2010 and has an incidence of 1.6 cases of every 1,000 population, with a median age of 65 years at diagnosis. Dasatinib has now been approved for first-line treatment of CML and is among the recommended first-line treatment options in the NCCN guidelines. Dasatinib is also an effective second-line treatment for patients who have developed resistance to imatinib. In the first-line setting, dasatinib provides more rapid and deeper degrees of response than imatinib, which may correlate with some improvement in long-term patient outcome. Grade 1 or 2 cytopenias are the common adverse events with dasatinib. Grade 1 and 2 pleural effusions have been reported in as many as 14% of patients, but were manageable in most cases. This excellent review of dasatinib in the first-line setting treatment of CML provides physician and patient education tables to address dasatinib management and toxicity issues in a proactive setting with several useful guideline charts. So we now have imatinib, dasatinib, and nilotinib usable in the first-line setting. Why do cancer patients smoke and what can providers do about it? By Sonia Duffy, RN, and colleagues from the School of Nursing at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Despite the widespread dissemination of information about the health risks associated with smoking, many cancer patients continue to smoke after their diagnosis and during their therapy. In fact, studies show some 50 to 83% of cancer patients continue to smoke after diagnosis. Reasons for this vary from nicotine addiction to lack of education or failure of healthcare providers to intervene. This article is an excellent review of what providers can do at the individual or hospital level to intervene more successfully. There is also a very nice table with dosage guidelines for nicotine replacement therapy, both non-prescription and prescription. Next, registry clinical trials. First, the bad news. By Dr. Striner and Norman, our statisticians from Ontario, Canada. In 2005, the International Committee of Medical Journal Writers adopted a policy that would require all randomized controlled trials to be registered first, or their results would not be published. While this rule has often been broken since 2005, the number of studies registered before implementation continued to increase. The authors review the database of this registry and note that oncology seems to have a high rate of small number phase 3, 1, 2, and 3 trials. The explanation here is that better drugs and treatments are needed, since only a small number of oncology agents ever get to the phase 3 double-blind prospective randomized trial setting, because they first have to pass through the hurdles of phase 1 and 2. As the authors point out, this depends more on pharmacology than epidemiology. Finally, Integrating Clinical Trial Participation into Clinical Practice by John Fried. In this community oncology journal, we frequently preach that it is advantageous and in some respects our duty to try and offer clinical trials to our patients in the community oncology setting. This nice review by John Fried points out how to first step back and think about designing and implementing clinical trials in your practice. There is a lot involved. You need a significant number of patients, of course, for research, a research division within your office with study coordinators and data managers, and of course, money to pay them, which usually comes from the clinical trials themselves and or your practice to fund all of this. Electronic medical records are a necessity anymore, and certain laboratory equipment is also desirable, if not required. So while it is not exactly easy to perform clinical trials in the community oncology practice, it is increasingly worthwhile for the patient and the clinician both, and certainly for the fight against cancer in general. And that concludes this month's podcast for the November 2012 issue of the Community Oncology Journal. Please visit us at our website, communityoncology.net, that's communityoncology.net, where we welcome your comments and suggestions, and where you may also search archived articles from previous months and years of the journal. And thanks for listening.